It's the 9 o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. G and Mace, we call it the nightcap. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Now, usually our good friend comes in on Thursdays at 9 o'clock, but you know, he's been on vacation for a while.
For like 7 months.
Yeah, the Seahawks are playing tomorrow. All kinds of stuff are going on. So Tom Tagney from the Tom and Curly Show joins us right now. Hey, Tom.
Hey,
hi. Yay.
Man, it feels like forever since we've seen you.
Yep.
I'm glad you came back all in one piece. How was your trip to Portugal?
Portugal was fantastic. I keep running into people who've been to Portugal. I managed to get through my entire life without ever having been, and I don't understand why it took me so long. It's an absolutely incredible place. Varied. We went to six different cities over 2 weeks, and it's for a small country, it's amazing how varied the landscape and the citizenry can be. It's just a spectacular place, and I don't want to bore people or brag about it, but man, Portugal's something.
When you say we went, who's we?
Well, it was an interesting five of us. So my wife and my two daughters and my new son-in-law. So all five of us were traveling.
And,
you know, it's tricky. Here's the one thing I will say. I love traveling, and I love traveling with my family, but I'm usually the dad, and so I'm the one that kind of calls the shots. I'm the one who does all the research. I'm the one, okay, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And a lot of the family, they go along with it. Well, now that they're adults,
right,
my damn daughters have all sorts of ideas of their own, and they want to go this place, and they want to go that place. And I just, it's like, hey, this ain't like what it used to be.
You know what? Tom? I never thought about that. That is a good point.
It is.
I didn't think, you know, as the dad, you know, you do call the shots.
Yeah.
At least I have.
So is it like a Father's Day situation where you're kind of, you have some sweet alone time or?
Oh, no. We were never alone.
Okay.
No, we were never alone. We were together all. In fact, this is really off topic, and we can cut this out if we want to. But the interesting thing is the last time I brought the entire family, this is before Kate was married, so it was just the four of us, but I brought my mother. We spent like 10 days in Paris, and I really wanted to show the kids Paris. And Kate, I think, was like 16 or 17, and my other daughter, you know, was like 11 or 12. And so I thought, this is going to be our one last big trip, and I was going to show around Paris because I know Paris like the back of my hand. Well, as soon as my 17-year-old, 16-year-old daughter, whatever she was, got hit Paris, she took her my other daughter, and they went off, and they did all these things without me, and I said, this is ridiculous. This is supposed to be family time together. And so now, years later, we're now doing, and they're very conscious, you know, because mom had said, listen, dad really wants to, the family should, you know, we'll try to do things together, you know, this kind of stuff. And so now they wouldn't let us do anything as part. All five of us had to do everything. And at times I said, man, I just soon let you go up. And we would go hike miles and miles for these little pastries my daughter wanted to track down. And I said, I don't care about them pastries. Just go get it for me. Oh, I thought you wanted to be together all the time, dad. So the pendulum swung and hit me in the eye.
Tom, that was awesome. We're not cutting that out. That was amazing.
Oh, I love it.
Absolutely amazing.
Okay.
All right. Let's get to the real reason why you are here. What movie do we have this week, Tom?
Well, this is really something. This is called Dora the Explorer and the Lost City of Gold. And I have to admit that I'm fully aware. So Dora's been on the air for almost 20 years. So it's definitely a worldwide brand. I'm very familiar with it. I've seen all the backpacks, and I know what she looks like and how she dresses and all this.
Mm-hmm.
But I had never seen the show. So I thought, doing the, you know, my due diligence, I would sit down, and I watched four back-to-back episodes of Dora the Explorer, and it about killed me. It is unbelievably painful as an adult to sit through and watch these things. However, at the same time, I've got to say that I admire the hell out of it. I respect it to no end because it's directed at preschoolers. She plays, Dora is a spunky 7-year-old Latina, and she goes on these adventures, and she has her friend, you know, Monkey the Boots, and a talking backpack, and a singing map, and she has all these tasks that she has to complete. And the idea is it's designed for 3 years old and up is how they brand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really for that 3 to 4 year old preschool crowd. And I can imagine it being very helpful for them in all sorts of good ways. And just to give you a sense, if you're not familiar with Dora, this little tune might remind you that, oh, maybe we do know Dora. And it is funny. Ever since I saw this last week, I've been running into parents, except because we haven't really talked about this, but running into parents mentioning, I says, did your kids watch Dora? And all these parents' eyes roll back in their heads. Oh, no. All their kids watched it. Their kids loved it, but they, you know, can't abide it. And I'm just to give you a sense, and this is what was for me. Each of these shows is designed as kind of like a multi-step task for Dora to complete with all the aids of her friends and the viewing audience and everything else. But just to give you the sense of the kind of the monotony of how it has to play out, this is just a typical example from one of the shows.
First, go across the icy ocean, past the snow hills, through the cave, and that's how you get to the princess. So remember, ocean, hills, cave, princess. Say it with me. Ocean, hills, cave, princess. Ocean, hills, cave, princess.
See, so you can, I mean, you can understand the processing, the kids are going, they're learning sequencing, they're learning the individual jobs, and they say, okay, now which one do we do? So it is, but that's the level at which, you know, the TV show operates. So then I began thinking, one of the other things, the cute things she does, there are certain things she always does. There's Swiper the Fox, I'm sure you're quite familiar with, where no swiping, the fox is always trying to steal her stuff, and they have to accomplish that. She often says things in Spanish, just a word or two in Spanish, that's where you get the multilingual business or bilingual business. She makes up lame songs on the spot just to kind of get through a situation, and she consistently breaks the fourth wall. Here's another example from a TV show, I think it was a different show, where she asks the viewers questions, and there are these big long pauses, and then she sort of responds.
Hola, soy Dora. I'm going to read from my storybook. Do you like books? We love books. Yeah, books are cool.
Yeah, books. We love books.
Okay. So that's enough. That's an introduction for people that have no, you know, had no contact like me with it. And I'm sure it just brings back either nightmares or fond nostalgic memories for a lot of parents who've sat through this. But if you're having a hard time imagining what a full length live action Hollywood movie of this would be like, I don't blame you because I felt the same way before I finally saw The Lost City of Gold. What could be more insipid than 105 minutes of Dora methodically completing a task and then methodically celebrating completing the task, which is the general gist? Well, thankfully, the filmmakers are well aware of the problem, and they take a few daring risks with the material. And this is where I think I'm wondering what people are going to think about this. Most noteworthy, they decide to make Dora significantly older. In the movie storyline, they've got Dora's parents who say, you know what? You've been raised great. She's been homeschooled in the Peruvian jungle. 10 years have passed. She's now 16 years old, and it's time for her to be reintroduced to American society, and they send her off to a school in L.A. So now you have a preschool sensibility of Dora in a high school setting. Now, that really kind of... Wow, how is that going to work? And I'm here to tell you that it does work, but it does raise some kind of challenges. And I don't know, should I just jump into what this is going, or do you want to talk about the Dora experience yourself before we even talk about the movie? Well, where do we want to go with this?
I'll start with, I'm thankful and grateful for Dora.
Okay,
right?
Great.
I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you have... the experts, if you will, that say, oh, you should only allow your child 30 minutes a day or 15 minutes a day of video or video games or TV, whatever. I'm here to tell you that Dora the Explorer captured my kids' attention more than any teacher at the preschool kindergarten age.
Right.
Great. Because it was a cartoon.
Yep. Animated.
Because she was so soft spoken. Mm-hmm. Because she was really nice.
Yeah.
And they could sit there and talk to her, and it felt like Dora was talking to them.
Sure.
Like, if you think about it, you go to a classroom, and we are all saying now, hey, classroom size matters. Like, too many kids in a class, that's too much. Some kids feel like, so if you got 35, 40 kids in a class,
right,
some kids are like, oh, well, I guess I don't matter. Well, when you have one to two kids being, quote, taught by the teacher. And in this case, Dora is talking to my sons right to the TV. So this is personal. So when they're when Dora's talking, she's not talking to the TV. She's talking to them.
You, yes.
So my personal experience is, hey, Dora, thank you. Thank you, because they are able to do some things. Am I saying that all you need is Dora to? No, you need more. Just like in school, you need math teachers. You need English. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, in life, in preschool, you need all kinds of folks. You need Dora. You need, I had Mr. Rogers, all of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love Dora.
Yeah, that's great. And so, I think educationally, it is brilliant the way the design is. It's just for a parent. Once you get, I mean, there's a certain formula, and it's obviously intentionally formulaic, so the kids get used to that.
Right.
And they figure out, okay, I've got to cross a bridge, I've got to go through a gate, and I've got to climb a big red hill. That was the very first episode, and they do that over and over and over again. There's something very reassuring about that. And you're right, there's nothing threatening about Dora. Dora constantly asks for your help. Hey, I need to pull this diamond out of the the grass here. Can you help me? And then you've got, thank you for helping me. So she's very involving. She has no sort of personality of her own. It's just that, hey, I want to do this thing, and you can help me. And it makes perfect educational sense.
Do you think that this is, I'm thinking about some of the nostalgia that's real hot right now. And you've got stuff that's out that was popular when, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's sort of being used and updated and aged, if you will. Does this fall into that?
Well, see, I was wondering. So I talked to a couple. We had our Neighbors Night Out thing last night, and there are a couple of girls on our block that grew up with Dora, but now have outgrown Dora, and they don't really have any interest in Dora. But then I told her parent that, no, but Dora's now in high school, so now Dora is older than these kids are. They've outgrown the preschool Dora, but they haven't grown. That they might, she says, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Maybe I would be interested in taking them to this movie, because the thing about Dora that you still like, that's still there. You know, she's got this kind of wide-eyed innocence, this exuberance for life. That's still there. You put it in a high school setting where every kid is snarky. Every kid is this. They look down on her, but she is so winning in her approach. They all dismiss her. She's complete. What is the defining characteristic of being a teenager? You're self-conscious about everything.
Right.
Well, Dora is blissfully free of being self-conscious. She's just homeschooled. She just can't understand why people are, so she just is who she is. She's mocked by her fellow students. They call her Dorka right away. She gets a new name. But the thing is, then she gets, this is the plot that's a little goofy, but she and some of her classmates get kidnapped and taken back to the Peruvian jungle. And then suddenly, all of her smarts, her practical know-how, her unbridled optimism comes to the fore, and she
love that. I love the plot.
Yeah.
Love the plot. Good.
Okay. So here's what, and the thing is, I think it's a pretty generic jungle adventure kind of story. You know, you got kind of Indiana Jones booby traps, and you've got, poisonous darts, and you've got, pretty conventional quicksand.
I like that.
pretty traditional stuff. There's nothing really special about that. But what is special is the smart filmmakers who decide to have some fun. You know, it's not true to the sensibility of the original Dora, but I think it's true maybe to an adult Dora or a teenage Dora or a parent's Dora, and that is, they're very aware of the silliness of their traditions, and they really play with it. So, for instance, they have a lot of fun with the TV show Roots. There is a sequence, I'm not going to explain to you how it happens, but there is a sequence halfway through the movie where all of a sudden, this live-action version is turned into the crude animation that's used in the original show. And everything,
really?
All of a sudden, it becomes this animated movie again,
really?
Looking just like that. And I'm like, oh my God, it's such a fun, unexpected development in the middle of the show. It's like, oh, that's smart. That's really clever. Another thing they do is Dora makes up. So they're in the jungle, and one of the teenage kids, these really snooty, smart-ass kids, they're really embarrassed because they have to go to the bathroom, but they don't know how to go to the bathroom in the jungle. And so she says, you know what? I'm going to sing a song. And she sings a poop song, basically, just like the little like the 7-year-old Dora would do in the TV show. Oh, you got to dig a hole, and then you do. And it's like so dumb, but it also is so endearing, and it makes the teenage kid who's so embarrassed by the fact that he has to go number two, that they sing a song and they go along, and you're all just laughing at it. And the, one of the funniest things for me is, and when this happens right in the beginning of the show, and I go, you know, this movie may work after all. They embrace the breaking the fourth wall, where they talk right, you know, look straight at the camera and say these things. In the very opening of the movie, Dora, this is before she's gone to high school in America, she's having dinner with her parents, and she ends up looking straight at the camera, and her parents don't know what the heck she's doing. Here's a little clip from the movie.
Dora, it's time for dinner.
Delicioso! Can you say delicioso?
She'll grow out of it.
The idea is the parents have no idea. Suddenly she's talking to you, and the parents go, who's she talking to? Looking around behind him. I go, that kind of cheekiness that I think is really foreign to the sensibilities of the TV show that I really think broadens the appeal of this movie to people beyond preschool. And then I found out, I didn't know this until after the movie, the guy who did this movie, the director, is the same guy who did the last couple of Muppet movies, and even more significantly for me, he wrote and directed the Flight of the Conchords TV series.
Really?
So there is a really smart, kind of a postmodernist sensibility and wit to this that you wouldn't expect from a Dora movie, and that's, to me, what saves this movie. I ended up having a blast. I brought my wife, who had never seen the show before. We had a blast because it's really knowing and smart about it, and it can appeal. You know how the strength of Sesame Street is? It appeals to kids, but also appeals to adults. Mm-hmm. This, unlike the original Dora, this one kind of appeals at a couple of levels. You can be wide open and embrace Dora that you know from the TV show, but you can also have a little fun, go, oh, I see what you're doing. You're having fun with the format, too. So I ended up, if I never see another Dora TV episode, I'm good. I've seen 5 of them now. I don't need to see that again, but I wouldn't mind seeing a sequel again if they make a movie.
Wow.
Why did I think that you're going to come in here and badmouth Dora?
I'll tell you why. Because Tom's a trickster. Because all week leading up to this, he's been like, you guys want to talk about Dora?
You know, that's right. You did. Why did you set us up like
you up? No, because I was going in thinking this is going to be the worst thing since whatever. I mean, I really thought, what a horrible idea to take a beloved worldwide 7-year-old and turn her into a 16-year-old right off the bat. It's like, that's ridiculous. Right. It's like inventing Superman and then saying, but he has no superpowers. Well, what's the point of making the movie then? I was fascinated by how they took this. And I do think I liked it more because I watched the TV show before. And so I got all those little jokes. Oh, why she's doing it. They make some crack about it. Because she's wearing the same stupid, is it orange shirt and red pants and shorts? She wears that even as a teenager in the jungle. He's like, that's silly. She still dresses like she's a 7-year-old.
Yeah, Tom set us up.
He did.
You even said it like, okay, you guys ready to talk about this?
All right.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, Tom. Well,
anytime.
That's awesome.
I had a deep discussion I wanted to get into, but we can't do it now. I mean, I wanted to ask you about, you know, making the world better, but hey, just go watch Dora.
Exactly. Dora will make the world better for you and for me.
Thanks, Tom.
Anytime.
Appreciate you. That's Tom Tagney from the Tom and Curly Show. You can hear that show right here on Cairo Radio from 9 to 12 every single day. And hey, Brother Mace, I think on Friday,
yes,
Tom's leaving and John Curly's leaving. So, bro, we got the keys to the Korea.
That's right. It's Cairo Radio. Takeover.
There's going to be scenarios on Tom and Curly on Friday.
Just don't crash the car.
Yeah, no problem. Coming up next, it's time for Mace's Stories. You know, we do that every single night at 9:30. You guys listen to Cairo Nights. GM Mace.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Aaron Mason, here with G. Scott. It's 9:30 G. It's time for Mace's Story.
Hey, let's get it. Let's get it.
I got a few little fun treats today. You know?
World's not going to end?
No, we all died yesterday. So today I'm going to keep it light. Have you ever lost anything valuable? Maybe it was a piece of jewelry. Maybe it was a wallet.
Oh, in Vegas, 98, robbed gunpoint. Ooh, in my office.
Really?
In Las Vegas. And class ring, man.
Ah.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah, that just... And over these years, since it's happened, you know, 22 years ago, since it's happened, it's just like, I don't, you know. I would want my original ring because it was blessed, you know, ceremony and all that stuff.
Right, right, right.
So it's just kind of, it's heartbreaking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that right there.
That's not bad. I had a friend who lost, I think it was $5,000 that they had in cash. They were going to go buy a car, and they stopped at a rest stop and used the bathroom, and they had the envelope on them, and it fell out, and so they were out like a bunch of money. Real sad. So there is a dude in Oregon who he was like, "Hey, I accidentally threw out a shoebox with $23,000 of cash in it. Okay. It's my life savings. What do I do?" And the folks in Oregon were like, "Well, that's already headed down to California to the recycle like plant where everything comes together. So we'll see what we can do, but no promises." So workers looked through literally tons of trash to be on the lookout for this box. And Linda Wise, the general manager of this Recology Recovery Center, she said a worker spotted the box on the sorting line Friday, and it still contained $22,940 of the man's money. He was only out $320.
So somebody cuffed $300.
That's what I think. Yeah,
right.
Just took it off the line. Finder's fee.
And by the way, ain't mad at that.
No.
If you find $27,000 of mine, and you sweep off $300 to $500, bruh,
enjoy your dinner.
That is a good transaction.
Yes.
Business as usual.
Happy to pay that.
That is awesome, man.
Isn't that a cool story.
You know. I'm going to segue into that.
Yeah.
And we've got a few minutes to talk. Usually we do What's On Your Mind next, and we'll bring in the gals from 710 over to do that coming up here next.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, man, if you really think about it, most people are good. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, most people are good.
Yes.
I always use this example, and you know I say it all the time. I talk about the grocery store. Because that's where I'm at a lot during the week.
Yep.
Where I encounter at the gym and at the grocery store, which are places that I'm at the gym every day. And I'm at the grocery store at least minimum 4 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And in going to the grocery store and to the gym, people are polite. They're courteous. Hello, how you doing? The other day, I left my wallet on the treadmill, because I don't never bring my wallet in, but I brought my wallet in. And for that reason, it's the reason why I don't bring my wallet in.
Yep.
And after about an hour, I'm like, oh, shoot. I go over there to it, and I come up there walking, and the guy says, "Hey, are you looking for your wallet?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh, is that the front desk?" I'm like, thank you, man.
Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that you forget when we spend less and less time out in public and actually interacting with each other. Like, you forget that people are good like that. And if all you see is the crap that happens online, where people are so nasty and anonymous, and that will make you think that that's the way the world is, but that's not the way the world is.
No.
People are good.
No.
Do we have time for a minute story? Because I got
Let's
one.
Let's go.
I got with this. We were talking about this the other day. You told a story, and this reminded me of it. There was a thief in New Jersey who swiped a bottle of ketchup from a restaurant, and the manager showed up. He discovered a brown bag next to the entrance, and it contained 2 unopened bottles of ketchup and a letter. And the letter, which was anonymous, said that this person had stolen a bottle of ketchup earlier. I thought it'd be risky, the letter said. I'm as square as they come, and this is the worst thing I've ever done. But he said it brought him bad luck and bad karma, including his car being hit by another vehicle just hours after the incident. So he wrote the note and replaced the bottles, hoping that it would turn his karma around, and he's learned a lesson from it. And the restaurant was like, we didn't even know any ketchup was missing.
Right.
But here's this guy. feeling bad about it, making amends.
Karma, baby.
I know.
She always know where you live, mm-hmm. your address, and you can even, you don't have to be online or nothing. She finds you. Karma is going to find you. It's true. Man. I mean, just guys out there, just understand that the world is more than social media. It's more than what
a
you see.
A lot more.
Like most people, like, you have social media. You don't post.
No, most people don't. In fact,
most people don't post.
The percentages of people who are on social media is very small. And then the percentage of people who are on social media
that post.
Who contribute anything is even smaller. Yeah. It's like 20% of 2% of the population. I sound like Bernie Sanders.
20% of the top 2% are posting hateful things on Twitter.
Bernie Sanders. Bernie, no, we got to say good things. I like you, Bernie. I mean, you're a good guy.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next, we hang out with Mara Dooley and Stacey Joe. We do What's On Your Mind. We do that every single night at 9:45. Man, means the world that you guys listen to the show. You listen in the Cairo Nights. GMAs. Welcome back into Cairo Nights, everybody. G and Mace, happy Wednesday. It's time for What's On Your Mind. We do this every single night at 9:45. We tell you what's on our mind. You tell us what's on yours. 98973 is Online Trading Academy text line. We got the gals here to talk, who usually talk sports with us at 8:30. They came back to hang out with us. Stacey Joe, Mara Dooley. What's up, gals?
Hey.
Hey.
All right. So.
Said gals, Aaron.
I was saying hi to you.
Okay.
Also, I don't see gender anymore. I'm woke.
All right, simmer down now, guys.
All right.
What's on my mind? Stacey's mean.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Maura, you go first. Okay. I have a feel-good story tonight. I found out yesterday I have a second cousin in town who I kind of just connected with that family recently. My dad had told me that he had a cousin that lived here when I first moved here and actually didn't meet them for a while because she has a sick child. Her son Tucker was born with spina bifida. Mm. And he has had to have a lot of surgeries. And I just found out yesterday that he had to have an emergency surgery. He's 8 years old.
Oh.
They had to put a shunt in. So it's a brain surgery.
Yeah.
And he was feeling scared about it. They sent a message out to the family kind of saying, can you guys just send videos, kind of cheer him up? And, you know, sometimes when you're in this business, you think like, I have to be able to use my contacts for some good here, right? Because this little boy is a huge Mariners fan. The last time I saw him, he was telling me how he got to meet Tim Beckham in the elevator when he went to a Mariners game. But he really, really, really wanted to meet D. Gordon. He loves D. Gordon. And I know that D is huge on helping kids. When our coworker Curtis Rogers was out at spring training, his sister has Down syndrome and D. Gordon came over and almost like gave her everything he had on him, his batting glove, his bat, his hat. So I asked Jessamine McIntyre, one of my bosses here at the station, and she's on Danny David Moore too, because she works a little more closely with some of the people at the Mariners. They're out there all the time at Edgar's Cantina to I asked if it was, too much of a reach for me to ask for that help. And she said no, and she was able to speak with Kelly Monroe over at the Mariners, and Dee was kind enough to personalize a bat that he used in a game to Tucker.
Whoa.
Wow.
Haven't gotten it to him yet because he's still in the hospital, but sent him a picture and he sent me a video back today really excited thanking me, and I think that cheered him up a little, and I'm just so appreciative and thankful to everyone that helped with that.
And has he had the surgery?
He did. He had it last night. Everything went well. He's
okay.
Cool.
Still recovering, but doing well.
That means so much to kids, though, and I think that every time we were talking about it a bit earlier, and you know, maybe this is what's on my mind too after this conversation, is the idea of that there are a lot of athletes that do a lot of good for people and that means so much to so many people when they need that kind of inspiration the most. Like a kid going through surgery, you're terrified. Like, I can't imagine. I would be scared now as an adult. And it means so much to have that moment from someone. And I think that, like, I wonder if for athletes, too, it's nice to know 900 people are yelling at me on Twitter. Like, adults are yelling at me on Twitter and being just awful to me. But it's fine because this one person, this 8-year-old, feels like they can undergo surgery or that they feel better and they've taken their mind off of something because I took 5 minutes out of my day. And I think it means a lot to those athletes, too.
And D. Gordon is a guy who's shown time and time again that he's willing to do that. And he doesn't even want the credit for it, you know?
Right. No press.
Curtis
no
snapped
attention.
A picture and wanted to share that D was so kind to his sister.
But otherwise,
but
like,
D
we
came over on
known.
His own and didn't even expect anyone to do that. Yeah. It's so I'm awesome. Very grateful. And I think he's a great person. I think you're right. Sometimes we don't highlight those stories enough. We hear a lot of the bad with athletes.
Brother Mace?
Yeah. So we're off tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because of the Seahawks game.
Yep.
And then Friday, G, you and I are doing a non-hostile takeover of the Tom and Curly show.
Yeah.
So 9 to noon Friday, me and you gonna move up to the big leagues,
big
as
leagues.
They say.
Yep.
A lot more people listening from 9 to noon.
We are
shoes to fill.
And we are bringing up some of our stuff.
Oh, yeah. If you think we're not doing scenarios.
Oh, we are doing scenarios. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we only got a few more seconds left. You know what's on my mind? I think that story was amazing, Mara. You know, it was really amazing. And the one thing that I want to leave with is this. The next time that any of you listening right now and you think about getting on Twitter and telling that athlete to stick to sports, I want you to remember this. Remember the story that Mara just told. Remember what D. Gordon just did. Because if they listen to the stick to sports, then they don't do things like that.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. Even if you don't agree with what that athlete is standing up for and talking about, just remember, man, the stick to sports thing, it hurts some of these athletes very much. I mean, I know that
and you're talking to people. These are they're people who care about.
Like no matter how much money you make,
right?
You still have feelings.
Yeah,
like you could. Right? You think Bill
and other interests and desires?
Well, and someone making money doesn't make it okay for you to say awful things.
You think Bill Gates doesn't have feelings?
Right.
I mean, he does. He that's why he gives so much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Bezos might not.
You know what, man? You guys be doing Bezos ruthless, man. Yeah. Let's get on out of here. Thanks, gals.
Thanks.
Brother Mace, time to get on out of here, brother.
Let's do it.
Means the world, guys. Listen to the show. Appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. Be good.